Welcome to the round 14 Supercoach Coach podcast. Oh, it feels good to be almost through the buys, especially after a terror week. Mark, or FB Junkie, is back with us this week. How'd your week go, mate?
Had the first week I've gone up in the rankings for as long as I can remember, actually. Jumped up about 10,000 spots with 1765. Had Libba get injured, which kind of put a downer on the week, and I probably should have jumped up a little bit more than what I did. But yeah, I guess things went pretty well this week. How about you?
I was a little bit annoyed with Burgess going down because that put a donut on field. I mean, Burgess isn't a great scorer, but I was certainly affected by that.
And
I
didn't get like 70 well. Or something the week before?
Yeah, he did. And so I was really hoping his price would finally go up. His break even was like single digits, but not to be, which is frustrating. I had some really compromised trades. I don't know if you saw my team, Mark, but I traded in some weird picks. I traded in Justin Westhoff.
Okay, that makes sense given how shit he's been all year.
Yep. I traded in Robbie Gray.
Okay, that makes sense.
Where's and Luke Ryan.
Okay, Ryan makes sense. Like lots of people went Ryan last week and lots of people went Gray as well. Gray presented value. Westhoff is the weird one.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you traded out like premiums or something to pick them up too.
I traded out premium-ish. I traded out Darling and Moore to hit that.
Okay.
Guess how many forward premiums I have now?
Seven. Eight.
My team is not going to be complete at this stage. I just had to find value. There was obviously not as many value targets in the midfield, and so I had to look to the forward line, and yeah, it's grim. I still have one rookie left on field as well, but I don't have a whore, so I'm a bit nervous, Mark. It's looking quite grim. Like my bench rookies, Scott, Baker, Bewley, Hinge, Gardner, Burgess, like I'm tapped my team, so I had to go pretty wild with Westhoff and just go out on a limb there. But 90 on this first week into the team, and Charlie Dixon coming back hopefully in another week was the main reason I wanted to pick him up.
Okay, that makes a little bit of sense. I'm sorry that you don't have a haul. I don't either, mate. It's been a rough year.
We were hoping for a bit of a jump up the ladder over across the buys, but I see other communities doing actually all right as well. So we'll have to see how everything shakes out after next week, mate.
Yeah, things didn't go so great that way.
I can tell our leagues are moving up a little bit, which is good. Actually, next week's also my best bye week, I think. So I'm still keeping my fingers crossed.
I don't think you're alone there, mate. I think from what I could see, a lot of teams are really struggling around 13 and should be pretty fine for this week. I think you'll see a lot of teams with 14-plus premiums on the field this week.
Unfortunately, it doesn't mean I'll get much of a leg on in the competition, but that's all right. Let's whip around with a quick group update before we get to some questions.
Just before you took Westhoff and Gray, did you notice that Port have the hardest draw for the rest of the year?
I certainly did. We had a little chat about that, but I didn't have any choices. Like I needed a guy who was really cheap. I thought if I'm going to go for a compromised player, then the least I could do is bring in a player that could potentially cover the rocks as well. 90 from the first week's not too bad. And with Dixon coming back, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed.
Okay.
Wines and others too. Anyway, I won't go too much into it because it's not a good selection. I just had to take a risk. And actually, that's going to be almost the theme of this week's podcast. There are quite a few people struggling with budget. So a lot of people looking at a few more unique options. We'll talk about Brayshaw. We'll talk about even Franklin. So a lot of people canvassing multiple cheaper options, and we'll have a quick squeeze at those and potentially spend a bit less time on the ultra premiums who are a little bit easier to make a decision on.
Okay.
Quickly, a group update before we get into the questions. First, the Supercoach Coach public group. Michael's team is leading with his team break a leg. Overall rank of 16th, which is awesome for him. And in our Supercoach Coach Patreons group, Seb's team, Geordie Demolition, has taken the lead from Aiden Stargazing Goats. Seb moved up to 177th after a 1600 score on the weekend. So, yeah, a lot of movements across the buy rounds, mostly drastic rather than not. Quite a few people sliding all the way down, a fair few sliding fairly high up. Any thoughts before we head into the questions, Mark?
No, I did have a read over some of these questions, mate. They are not easy ones tonight.
No, they're not. And hopefully you still have a few trades to play with if you're in this situation, because trades to burn are certainly things that you want when you're taking higher risk options. If you're in a situation where you're not and you're considering higher risk options, then sometimes the best move might just be to continue running out a rookie for the rest of the year. So we'll discuss all that very shortly, Mark, and we'll start with the rookies as we have done most of the year. And this first question here is from Rowan Callum on Facebook. Is it worth bringing in Gardner with his low 22 on the weekend looking concerning? Dunny also asked us about Gardner because he was worried that Gardner wouldn't be much of a long-term selection, which I honestly wasn't really thinking about too much considering he played almost immediately after being drafted. What are your thoughts on Gardner, mate? Did you trade him in?
I did trade him in last week and kind of regretting it a little bit. Like, playing as sort of a second ruck against Carlton, and Cruz has just destroyed him in the ruck, one-on-one contest in the forward line where Cruz has just booted a goal. And he didn't score. I don't think he scored a point after half time, and wasn't really a target at any point during that time either. Basically anonymous on field, which is not what you want from one of your players, and was basically zero help over the buyers, the only advantage being getting some cash.
22 is better than naught for me, but it's almost as good as a donut, unfortunately. We did have another debutant on the weekend who surely a few people would have been tempted by because he came in for a long-term injury, and that's Griffin Logue. We got a question about him from Michael Savory from Facebook. He scored 90-plus points on the weekend, and he's basically in to replace Alex Pearce as that second tall defender for the remainder of the year. So job security is a big tick. Yep. The question is, do you think he can keep up that sort of scoring, Mark? Did you watch the game? What did you think?
I did watch some of that game. Definitely liked Logan. I liked him in his debut year at times as well, and he showed some scoring potential, but he also averaged 43 over the course of the year. So to me, that was his highest score ever in his career, which it's good, but he's in for Alex Pearce, who was really, really inconsistent with his scoring and wasn't exactly averaging a lot. So really good job security at 164. If he was 134, 144, it'd be a lot better. I guess he will at least provide cover for your team for the rest of the year, and he's a lot better than Gardner. I guess just with money so tight for, I would assume, everyone, it'd be pretty hard to pay that much for him.
Yeah, I think if you're not in need of playing players this week, you'd take the extra week just to see how he goes before trading him in. I know a few people are looking at running a rookie out for another few weeks while some of their newly traded in rookies matures in cash so that they can actually upgrade those final positions. And if you are in that spot, Griffin Logue potentially would be a little bit more appealing if you think he can manage 70 to 75 as an average for the next few rounds, because you could use him as sort of like, that's a mid-price-ish score compared to a lot of the rookies at the moment who, when they have been named, are scoring in the 50s. You know, you're talking Answorth, Gardner, Bewley. A lot of the new debutants aren't exactly scoring brilliantly. So from that perspective, if you can manage a decent amount for another game, you'd be pretty tempted. But I don't know about paying for him this week at 164K.
Yeah.
Next question. This one's from @imbecilesc. He's asking about whether or not to go with Logue or to go with Naish instead. Now, this is an interesting one. I know a few people went early on him this week because they needed warm bodies.
Like me.
I mean, they've got plays to return from injury, which is obviously the most concerning thing. But 78 and 67 from his first two scores has looked good. And he has looked AFL grade. It doesn't look like he's overawed by the pace of the game or anything like that. So, you know, he's not like a Gardner type where you look at him and you go, gee, he'll be struggling to hold on to his spot. Yeah.
Bit surprised by Nation how good he was. I was really, really super impressed. But then, I mean, he did go disappear pretty much in the second half against the Crows. And I guess that a lot of players do that in their second game, so I wouldn't read too much into that. I have Naish. I have really high hopes for him. If he keeps his spot, I think he'll do really well. He's looked great as of a lot of the Richmond rookies this year. And, I think that it's tricky because I have Naish's better scoring potential than Logue, even though Logue did have one really big game. Logue has much, much better job security, and he plays this week, so it kind of depends what you're looking for, I guess.
All right, we'll move to the last rookie and then maybe we'll just recap on the rookies as a whole, because there's not a heap of options this week unless some debutants get named. This next one's from Paul Cassatt from Facebook. Is Dylan Clark a must-have if named? He's nearly the same average as Haitley, except he's actually playing. Yeah. What do you reckon, mate? Like, he actually kept his spot in the team, which last week we discussed he was a little bit at chance of being dropped. I don't know if you heard the podcast. That was off the back of Woosh's comment saying that they might not play a tag every week and Dylan Clark might not hold his spot, but he might retain his spot elsewhere on field. How do you rate him as an Essendon
player? Why do you think that Woosh might have said that? Just to put Hawks off a little bit, you reckon?
They don't have a lot of tag targets left, do they?
Well, look at Amira, who's like a super obvious one, and meant that he wouldn't have had to plan for it. Like, I just think that that's just deception, really, more than anything. I guess we might not play a tagger every week. Pretty hard to drop him on current form, though. Completely shut down Cripps and Amira and got a bunch of the ball himself. He did show his lack of kicking skills at one point where he just booted the ball out on the full by quite a fair way, but he also kicked a really good pass into the forward 50 at one point under a fair bit of pressure that hit a target. So, yeah, I think it'd be very hard to drop him in the short term, but there's no guarantees going forward. I guess his price is the tricky point, 147. And look, I think that is he a must-have? Probably not, because he's not going to be on your field. It's not like earlier in the season, but I will be going out of my way to bring him in this week.
I think a little bit of the decision just relies on whether or not you need these guys on field. Like, if you need players on field, then surely you look at Griffin Logue and Dylan Clark, look at their relatively decent job security and their so far decent scoring potential and go, I will probably pay extra for these guys. If they're sitting on your bench, I'd be very wary about spending that additional cash on your bench. Well,
I don't think anyone's going to be bringing in a midfielder that's going to be on field really this week, are they? Like a midfielder.
Unlikely to. I don't think there are a lot of trade out targets. Maybe, there are a few people with like Walsh, Gibbons, center field types who may be in that situation, but you're right in that most people probably have finished their upgrading in the midfield by now.
Yeah, so that means, are you bringing in Clark this week?
I am deciding between either playing a backline rookie on field or a midfield rookie on the field for the next few rounds. Okay. So unfortunately, I'm in that position. Either that or take another 400K mid-pricer and do more side swaps. So yeah, I'm deciding between multiple compromised positions, and definitely one of them is playing a rookie on field for a bit longer. Are you going to be rookie free, Mark?
No. So I'll probably be looking at either Naish or Clark on field.
I wouldn't be surprised if there are more coaches than not considering this. Like, there's certainly a lot of people at the top of the ladder that have fully upgraded teams and they brought in the Stacks and the Whores. But I reckon there's a vast majority who are struggling like we are. And so it'll be a reasonably common occurrence, I suspect, one rookie left on field.
Okay, that makes me feel better. Out of them, I think Clark has the highest scoring potential, but I think that the premium, even the low-end premium that I bring in, either mid-forward is better than a back premium in most cases. So I will probably play Naish on field, obviously not this week, but going forward.
Definitely a good point to finish with these rookies is that between playing a premium midfielder versus a premium backline player, you'd obviously much rather the premium midfielder, and therefore the backline rookie becomes comparatively more tempting.
Yep.
So outside of these four, is there anybody else that you would be considering? We didn't actually get any other questions about other rookies.
I think Nick Hind is probably the one that I'd be considering. I know he didn't score amazing on the weekend, but he did look pretty good, and he's had a lot of VFL experience, and he did a couple of really nice things and stood out. So I would hope that he would continue to get some games. Mature age, midfield, cheaper than Dylan Clark, maybe someone that someone considers as like a backup to Clark if you're really, really stuck for cash.
Now, any point sort of rating this, or it'll be horses for courses? Should we rate these five rookies?
I do think it's horses for courses. I think that Dylan Clark is a really clear standout there.
And that's good to hear from an Essendon supporter too, actually. All right, let's move to trade out candidates now. And the first question we've got about trade out candidates is from @James_Stelts from Twitter. If you had to make a choice between keeping either Brody Smith or Marty Hoare as your D6, who would you choose? And God, does this question make me want to throw up in my mouth because I don't have Hoare. And the fact that he's competing with Smith's scoring output is certainly a bit depressing. What do you reckon, mate? It's a pretty close call, actually.
Yeah, I think that I'd be tempted to keep Hoare, to be honest, because of role security as much as anything. Like, Hoare's role probably won't change a heap, although he'd probably be freed up a little bit now that potentially now that Lever and May are back, and that may provide some doubt with his role going forward. And it is his first season, so there's a good chance that he'll tire. I just think that Brody Smith was super reliant on the kick-in duties to get his scoring above that 90 mark, and he's just not doing the kick-ins very much at all anymore. So he's playing more of a wing role, and that's going to make his scoring quite up and down. And they also do have – they've got a decent draw on one side, but then they've got three pretty tough games as well against some top teams. So he really seems to struggle against the top teams. He would – now that Luke Brown is back, it's really affecting his scorings with the kick-ins. And honestly, I have Smith. I wish I didn't have Smith, but I just have no way of really dealing with that without going down to like two or three trades.
I've got a few more trades. I don't have money to trade him to anyone meaningful, but I certainly want to trade him out. So I'm in the same boat as you. I wanted to trade him out mid-year. Like, I never saw him as a keeper. I think I said that from the start of the season. I picked him because I didn't find any mid-prices that I prefer. And the way my structure at the start of the year dictated that I needed a mid-priced defender. But I think you've brought a really good point about Luke Brown. Then you've also got the other half backers that are just taking potential scores away from him as well. And Laird seems to be coming on form a little bit more as we move to the second half of the season. So it'd be interesting to see whether or not Smith can keep this up. Or more realistically, I think Smith is a candidate that scores 85 a bit more regularly than 95, which I think he's only done once in his career so far. So if you're stuck with him, that's not the end of the world, but Hoare certainly looks like a decent option. The other thing compounding that decision is Brody Smith's on the bye this week, and if you held Hoare, he's now bye free, so it makes it a bit easier as well.
Yep.
All right, next question. This one's from Heath Yasunuga from Facebook. Is it worth holding on to, God, Riley O'Brien? Man, how many people would be left with him, I wonder, but man, 180?
Yeah.
Just absolutely absurd. 23 hitouts to advantage. I think they average about 4 to 5 points from each of those. He basically got a full premium score just from his hitouts. Absolutely demolished Chol. Obviously won't keep that up, but he's got a couple more price movements in store, Mark.
Yeah, it's tricky. He's got a minus 20 break even and now 446. That makes decision making this week a little bit tricky. I guess if you've kept him this long, which to me seems like a bit of an odd decision to keep him this long. I cashed in a while ago and got all that money on field. But if you have kept him this long, then I would suggest that maybe you're going for leagues and you probably want to eke out all that cash you can get and be tip top for the finals. So taking another 50 to 100K out of him might be quite valuable to do that. And so I'd probably be a little bit tempted to wait him out. But I mean, he's worth 446 and he got a 181 on your field. He's done his job.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you are thinking about holding Riley O'Brien, you just got to remember that there are only 10 rounds remaining to play for the year. So if he's on the bye this week and you want to maximize two of his next big price movements, then you're holding on to him for three more rounds, three of the last 10 rounds before you actually get to cash in on that juice. So I think you hit it right on the head, Mark, when you said you'd do it in a league situation. But if you were going for the overall prize, then you're better off basically forfeiting the additional about 80K that you'd get for him and instead just getting those points on field and working for you. Because the main thing that we're facing into in the second half of the year is just a minimal number of rounds to achieve a suitable point value in order to make a trade worthwhile. And a lot of the time that's shortcutted by the fact that we hold trades for injuries in the second half of the season. So, you know, you get 100 points for just replacing a premium who's otherwise out. But outside of that, really, if you're talking about upgrading or completing your team, you want to do that ASAP, and value starts becoming less and less relevant from an overall point of view. Next question. This one's from William Miller from Facebook. If Rocky is not named and we have held this far, do we persist?
Next question.
Are you still holding on to it?
Yes, and I'm not happy about it. Nah. Yeah.
It sounds like you're really dejected, but you're like, he's still there and he will be.
I'm really hoping that he didn't go to Perth because the ground is just so hard. So,
I think you're in the position where if you've already held him 1 week for injury, you hold him for an additional week. It also seems far-fetched that too many teams would be hit much harder in the round 14 bye compared to the round 13. So if you held him for the more painful bye, then arguably you just keep holding on to him. All right, next question. Now we're moving into potential trade-in targets. Mark, this first one is from Troy Misso, one of our patrons. With rookies not being great cash cow options at the moment, do you suggest any fallen premiums that are injured or coming back from an injury or have bottomed out that could generate some cash but deliver higher scores while they're on field. So this is a pretty unique situation to be in where we're considering mid prices because we're not finishing our team instead of at the start of the season where we're looking not to sacrifice too much on-field scoring by not carrying too many rookies. So I certainly haven't considered this before, but Mark Murphy is the guy a couple of people have asked about. 300 and about 80K, I think, is his price tag with a break even of 100. Of course, on the buy this week, but for people considering how they're going to complete their teams, and I know I'm in that situation, I'm wondering, do I trade in Mark Murphy next week rather than running a Nash or a Logan field? What do you think about that, mate?
Oh, wow, I'm not sure that Murphy's the best candidate for that. Just like looking at his scores this year, there's a few low ones in there, even pre-injury. There's some good ones in there as well. He's sort of had four or five higher scores, but yeah, a couple of 50s and 39, 70 sort of scores. Doesn't fill me with a heap of confidence. So yeah, I'm not sure that Murphy's the guy, but isn't this like exactly what you did with Westhoff last week?
Yeah, the difference with Westhoff, and the only reason why I pulled the trigger on him ultimately, is I thought I'm taking the punt that hopefully one of Gorn and Grundy misses a week on the run home, and it happens to be, you know, before team sheets or whatever, so I can pivot Westhoff and actually cover a donut. So that's, you know, the 10% chance that I'm taking to hopefully, you know, help tip it over the edge. Yeah. Mark Murphy obviously doesn't serve that same role, so I'm a little bit more hesitant. The upside obviously being Mark Murphy is probably more reliable than Westhoff for scoring
points. Oh, I'm not totally sure on that based on what we've seen so far this season, but you could be right. I guess it's about how close is this person going to get to premium numbers. Like a lot of, like including yourself, a lot of people took Robbie Gray last week for 400,000, which is a similar play really. And is Gray going to get close enough to the other alternative sort of forward, sixth forward option to be worthwhile in that position? And there's a good chance that he will. Will Murphy be able to do that same thing as a midfielder? And what does he need to get? He probably needs to average more than Gray to fulfill that role. Really, really team dependent. If you're super low on trades and you just don't see it getting upgraded in that last spot, then taking a punt on someone like Mark Murphy, I can definitely see some value in that.
Bang on in terms of it being a little bit more team dependent. The other thing to think about is if you're struggling with cash but you have trades, then you potentially would rather take a punt on somebody who has higher standard deviation or variance in their scoring, because as long as they get a couple of big games, you can sideswap them more easily than Mark Murphy, who might hit 90s, 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 but potentially has lost the ability to score 110, 130. So I'm talking about potentially a Franklin type, right? Rather than a Murphy type. So it also depends on how many trades you have as to whether or not you take him or out of position forward or backline player instead.
Yeah.
Right, next question. This one's from another patron, Darren Gaspari, asking about exactly the bloke I just mentioned. Lance Franklin plays three of the next four at the SCG, Hawthorn, Gold Coast, and Carlton in that next four. He's at 370K with a break-even of 43, and he had a monster game his last one, so has certainly come back into view. We've previously picked up Franklin as a cheap bloke who we're hoping would rebound and finish the season off strongly. Is this year the right year to continue making that play, or is Buddy and Sydney a bit past it?
Well, my short answer would be that I think Buddy and Sydney are a bit past it. But I think that if you look a little bit deeper, there might be something more to Buddy. I mean, Horse has said that Buddy is finally training properly, or not, maybe not properly, but training a lot more, and kicked five in the last game, which is a good sign. The thing that sort of has me a little bit interested in this, mate, it's probably just a total coincidence, but in 2017 and 2018, in the last sort of five or six rounds, Buddy had two scores above 150 in both years. And that was sort of not training a lot. So maybe at the end of the year, he's just a gun and had some huge games. He had a 178 and a 161 in the last three rounds last year. That's just huge. I don't know. It might be a bit romantic, but you could make money off a Dersma swap if you've got enough dual position players to get him through to that point. But yeah, you could make money off swapping Walsh to Franklin. It's a huge gamble, but I think that, as you said before, like you're looking at upside on one of these players potentially, and Buddy certainly has that.
I think another thing to keep in mind is in 2018, Sydney finished with a wet sail, and Sydney certainly seemed to be improving and playing better and better football and beating more and more opponents, especially in the middle part of the year so far. So if they continue that and move away from the start that they had, then Franklin certainly becomes a much more attractive option. Being in the forward line, I think how you see Franklin does need to tie into how you see Sydney going. It's not like he's going to run through the midfield and score 110 regardless. He does need to get some ball into him. Yes, he floats more in the midfield than other forwards do, but that's not enough for him to score 150. They need to be winning games for him to score that. So depending on how you see them continuing their form, that would also inform how tempting Franklin is.
Sydney have about a middle-ish sort of draw on the run home.
All right, next question, Mark. This one's from Scott Pantlin from Facebook, and we're now into talking about the role of gold players. Lachie Neale or McRae? I'm actually looking at this trade this week now that Libba is out, and I was going to upgrade him to a top-tier midfielder, and originally that was Neale, but McRae scored 150 on the weekend, considering McRae instead. What are your thoughts about the two of them?
I'm looking at probably getting in Neale this week, just because of the value that he presents at that price. I think it's just too hard to pass up. I think they're pretty hard to split, those two. McRae's got a few more runs on the board than Neale over the course of the last couple of years. I honestly don't know how I would split those two. I'd probably have McRae just slightly in front of Neale, but not with any confidence. I think that they'd be 50-50. What about you?
I am feeling pretty similar. I think I'm going to go McRae.
And McRae just unlikely to cop that tag. And there is a few taggers around. Neale will cop it, has shown against Curno that he can be susceptible to it, whereas McRae is probably the second or third person tagged to the Doggies.
Yeah, Bont and even Dunkley at this stage might get some pressure. And he hasn't been tested with a tag, so teams might be tempted to roll him into the McRae.
If you can do one thing for me, tag Dunkley.
Next question from @Demi_14. Is Adam Treloar a viable M8 trade-in? He's at a very attractive price.
Can I complicate that question a little bit, Marcus? Because they're all pretty similar prices. Yeah. Treloar versus Oliver versus Bont. I think Treloar is the cheapest at about 508 or something, and Bont about 520, and Oliver about 530.
I would not be trading in Oliver as an Oliver owner. I've considered trading him out multiple times. I just don't think Oliver's going to burn you as much as those other guys are. Oliver really relies on a high possession count. He's not as damaging as Bont is. Treloar is probably a little bit more similar to Oliver, but Treloar is obviously playing for a team that's a top three contender versus Oliver, who's playing for a team that's struggling to replicate last year's feat. So I'd have Oliver last. I'd probably have Bont first because he's just more explosive and has more potential to burn you, and then Treloar second.
Okay.
But, yeah, you're taking a punt, like splitting hairs to a certain extent.
Before you started talking, I had them probably Oliver, Bont, Treloar, just on scoring potential, and Oliver's just seems like a proper premium, but is just a bit of value at the moment. You think he's just going to stay down all year? Like he does seem like the sort of player that could actually come home pretty strongly. Melbourne might come home a little bit stronger.
Yeah, I absolutely love Oliver in a team that's winning most of their games, because I think Oliver's upside is great, but his mediocre games, because he's not very damaging, Exactly. So if the team's winning, he'll get enough of the ball so he can manage a 90. But when the team's losing, if he gets like 20, low 20s in the possession count, he scores closer to a 70. Okay. And that really starts to ruin the 130s he's scoring, because that rebalances out to
100. Yeah, right. So I think I was listening to the last game that they played, and he had 20 possessions to halftime for 19 meters gained.
Yeah, yeah. I'm riding the roller coaster. It doesn't feel
right. It's okay. So I think this is going to have a huge influence over my decision this week. So hopefully you haven't totally screwed me with that advice.
Mm. Well, like in comparison, right? Merritt, he's scoring 112 for you and he started at 550K. Meanwhile, I paid 630K for Oliver and he's averaging 107. Like he's come down 10 points per game in average.
That's why paying 530 for him seems so good.
Absolutely. But, you know, and with these mid-price risks or the cheaper risks, like I think the main thing to keep in mind, and that's why potentially, a Mark Murphy type doesn't seem as attractive, is why are they doing worse? Is it stuff inside or outside of their control? Is it they've had a poor run of form, they've had a small niggling injury, they had a game where they missed three quarters of the game, or is it systemic? Is it the system letting them down? Is it the connection letting them down? Is the team winning less of the pie? Did they come back from an injury late in the season and they're going to continue to struggle for the rest of the season? With Oliver, like, he's had a fine preseason.
No, he hasn't. He had two shoulder reconstructions.
Didn't he play through the JLT series, though?
Yeah, but like pre-Christmas, he had, I don't know whether it was reconstructions, but he had surgery on both his shoulders.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I'm underrating that, but I just, to me, that doesn't affect your running a bit. Like, I guess I started him, so maybe I discounted that. And that's a great point to actually bring up, Mark, because if you did see that as a reason why he started off the season slowly, and then you had confidence that that was the thing holding him back, then maybe you'd look at the second half of the season and go, yeah, he's got value. So I guess it's just how do you see the reason for his poorer scoring? And for me, it's a bit more Melbourne than his preseason. Yeah. But if for you, it's more his preseason, then maybe you take the risk on him.
I guess my issue is that I've got McRae already. Dunkley's killing it. And can there be three Bulldogs that are going to score 110 plus? Whereas at Melbourne, it's not like Oliver has a lot of competition.
Not into Treloar. He's the one that you probably haven't talked much
about. And probably just because Collingwood just bats so deep. I think that if Treloar was in a different side where they didn't bat so deep and they relied on him a bit more heavily, Treloar would average 120 plus and he'd be absolutely in my team. But I think with Adams coming back in the next few weeks, that has had an impact on his scoring in the past. And yeah, there's a lot of good midfielders in that Collingwood side to share the points around. And Treloar's disposal is horrific.
To me, a lot of Treloar's scoring feels a little bit down to luck. He's averaged 105 twice previously, and at the moment he's currently on track for 105, and he's managed 110 twice. I've picked Treloar multiple times in the last few seasons, and there's no discernible reason that I can see that he scores 110 over 105, besides the fact that, like, he might just have one extra or half an extra shank per game across 20 rounds.
Yeah.
That leads, you know what I mean? Like, it's, I don't really know if there's, like, you're taking a punt that he just has one less shank, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Last question about the midfielders, mate. This one's from at Kryptonite SC asking about Brayshaw as an M8. So another value option. And I think I like this one a little bit more than Mark Murphy. He costs only about 30K more, 20K more.
60K. Yeah, it's about 60K, the difference. It's tricky because you're going off such a small sample size, right? Like, you're going off 2 weeks where he scored like 91 and 116 and hoping that the 116 is a better predictor of the future.
Third in the Brownlow last year, you know?
How the hell did that happen? That does not seem right. That seems like the Brownlow might not be going so well. If you look at his scoring at the end of last year, it's not like it's good, but for a midfielder, it's not actually like that impressive. He sort of had like a high score of a 126 because of his disposal. He had 8 from about 10 games over 100. So again, not that crazy good. Even though it was consistent sort of 115, 116, there's a lack of the 160 in there to really burn anyone and get up to that 110 plus averaging player. I think that he will improve, but will he improve enough to become sort of a fantasy midfielder? I have my doubts on that.
Not an awful draw, which is something to potentially think about, but there's no 400K midfielder that you're picking with utmost confidence. So it's just the flavor of risk that you like to take.
Yeah. I think, like, so can you just rank the three for me potentially? Brayshaw, Murphy, and Buddy?
Buddy 1, Brayshaw 2, Murphy 3. But the caveat is I'm an absolute sucker for that upside potential, and you know that. And I just mentioned previously, I've got 8 forwards in my team. So
you should pick a Buddy this week.
You
need to kick a lot of goals.
Well, the other thing is Sydney also look a fair bit better in the last 4 weeks. Whereas with Melbourne, I'm not sure that
they're
believe that. Yeah. All right, now we're moving into the forward line for some remaining trade-in options, and we're looking at the top of the ladder now. This first question is from at Placey02 asking about who the better option is between Boak and Walters. I'm just going to chuck in another one as well from Julian and Nice, who's asking about Dunkley v. Boak. So I think all three of them have the threat of potentially even managing 110 for a stretch of time. Dunkley's, I think, averaging 130 since round seven, so he's definitely on fire. but Walters, he's playing good enough footy that he could do that for a while as well. So in terms of forwards that could burn you at the top end of the tree, Boak, Walters, Dunkley, how would you rate them, mate?
I don't think we're talking on potential. I think we're talking on, like, what do we think will happen. And I think Dunkley, Boak, then Walters. Crazy that Walters kicked the winning goal two games in a row, or the winning score two games in a row, and yet had a better and higher scoring game the next week, kicking six and having 25 touches or something. Yeah, insanely good game from Walters. The absolute ripper. Dunkley, he was on 100 at halftime. Just massive game from him. I think Dunkley is just an absolute scoring beast, and I would expect him to completely dominate going forward. Boak, I brought in Boak this week. I was super happy with his game against Freo. Really slow start, but just some really crucial possessions late. And yeah, I'd have them. Dunkley's just high ceiling is just so much higher than the others, and he's priced accordingly, I guess.
Yeah, bang on. There's not much I can add on top of that, except that probably Walters is the riskiest in terms of his potential downside of the three of them. So he's the sort of clear third to me, but the average tells you probably what you need to know. So, yeah, that's a good call, Mark. All right, last question for the week from @Catter2018. Is Robbie Gray worth a trade as a potential swing option, but just more broadly at 433K and with Wines also potentially coming back? What are your do you have concerns about whether or not he'll get relegated back to the forward line? Does he look like a good option to you? What do you reckon, Mark?
Kind of feel like you've had your chance to pick Robbie Gray. I think that at 392 or 405, they were the times to get him. Given Robbie Gray's history, I could be wrong, and he could like, he's averaged 110 three times before, basically, but he hasn't done that for a few years. So I think that around that 90 mark is probably a lot more reasonable to expect from him, and that might be what you need. It might be decent. 436 is not a terrible price to pay if you can get a 90 average, and it saves you an upgrade. So I don't think he's a terrible pick. I think that you're probably a week late, and I think that this week against Freo was his game to shine. Just with Rocky and Wines both out, it was his time to really crush it in the middle, but he didn't do that. So yeah, take that what you will.
Yeah, they've got a tough run coming up, and sort of highlighted by the fact that they're playing Geelong just this weekend. So 400K was definitely a lot easier to take that risk on than at 430. So I agree with you there, Mark. All right, let's finish up with a captain's corner. I've done a bit of research the last few weeks, but I'm actually in Tassie for
John
Mofo at the moment. And the last few weeks have been actually pretty good. But this week, I haven't had as much time to do some research, Mark. So I might lean on you a little bit. Have you had a quick sneaky peek at who you might go with?
Yeah, I think that Gorn has been in such amazing form, and he has Freo with Darcy, Darcy actually rucked pretty admirably on the weekend, but backing it up for his second game in a row and travelling to Melbourne against Maxi Gorn might struggle a little bit. So I think he's a really good captaincy option. And then I guess that maybe like McRae against Collingwood might be not terrible.
Grundy against the Dogs, coming back from a bit of soreness or whatever Buckley was referring to.
Yeah, against Tim English seems pretty reasonable. Yeah, I guess going back to the Ruckman now that they're back, it was nice actually having a week off and having to think about midfield.
Yeah. Scott Lysette, who hasn't been scoring brilliantly, scored 110 against Darcy last week. So Gorn certainly looks like a great option there. Grundy, I think, because he's a captaincy option, you'd be a little bit more wary if you were concerned about his injury, but otherwise wouldn't be a terrible option either. Geelong comes back off their bye, and we've typically played poorly off the bye. So just a pinch of.
Yeah, I think you're like 0-7 off the bye.
Yeah. Some people might be laughing because they're like, surely coming off the bye shouldn't be a consideration when you're picking your captaincy. But Mark's 0-7 call is pretty apt. It's something that you potentially want to be concerned about. And it's at Adelaide at home. How about Lachie Neale against St Kilda, mate? Is there a chance of a tag there, or that looks okay?
I actually hadn't considered Lachie Neale because he will be coming in for his debut. Maybe a debut captain is actually the way to go. And I will have time between Gorn and the start of that game to potentially lock him in. With Steele injured and out for a couple of weeks, that should benefit Lachie Neale. I think that Ruckman into Ruckman seems like a pretty good bet
though. Yeah, I think I'll probably do Gordon into Neale unless I hear good things about Grundy or find out why he was sore or whatever the case.
Oh, yeah, because he did have a sore ankle, didn't he? You'd think that a week off he'd be all right. Never underestimate Grundy, mate.
That's true. CJ actually traded him out this week because he was so starved of options and he needed to downgrade. Wow. So, yeah, he pivoted West off into his ruck line and traded him out and cashed him in and is hoping he misses this week. So that's an interesting call.
Okay, I don't think he's going to be happy with how that works.
No, me either. All right, Mark, thanks for another good week, mate, and wishing you good luck for the last of the bye rounds as well as the rest of our community. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap up the bye series with, Mark?
Yeah, I'm pretty happy to fuck Liberoff out of my team. And I wish I could do Brody Smith and Rockliffe and a few others as well, but they'll survive. And hopefully Lachie Neale can do his thing in my team. Awesome.
And with that, we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
See ya.